I love Final Crisis, and so you're the one.
Yeah. Thank you. There's two. I love the two.
You use Freddie Freeman. He was Shazam.
I like Freddie Freeman. He's the guy that inspired Elvis.
Yeah. No one knows that.
If Elvis wouldn't have been that big fat guy, did Caradian Stadium not for Freddie Freeman?
We owe him everything.
I loved how you used him in that, and like that was the only time DC actually used him, really.
Well, we're doing him again in this Multiversity book next year, and he's in there. And
that was my question.
And Mary's in there, and the Lieutenant Marvel's, everybody's in it. So
awesome. I can't wait. That was really my question. Just if you were going to use Freddy and the Marvel family.
And yes, I've already answered your question, so it's over. Now, you answered to your question, yes.
Thank you. Let me just say, the Invisibles changed my fucking life. I think you're amazing.
It was designed to change fucking lives.
I guess my question is, there's this huge difference between, I mean, obviously everything books are going to be different, between the Invisibles and the Filth.
Yeah.
I guess my question would be, what events in your life, I guess, affected the change that went on from the tone of the Invisibles to the tone of the Filth? Because the Filth has a much darker tone, I find, than the Invisibles.
Well, my life just changed for the better, to be honest, Lane. It allowed me to write the darker book. Because you know, The Invisibles, a lot of I was trying to cheer myself and everyone else up. And then I was able to do the film, kind of taking the opposite position. Because I thought The Invisibles was lacking a dimension of materiality. It was about transcendence, you know, and I really wanted to get down into the dark and the cat shit and, you know, and smell the shoes. So it was kind of... I felt I needed that, and I also wanted to do it in a way that the prisoner related to Danger Man. I don't know if you guys know this stuff, you know, but Patrick McGoohan's two great series. So I think it's called Secret Agent Man here in America. But it was that idea of, you know, the Invisible to me was Secret Agent Man, and then the Filth was the prisoner. And it was really about King Mob, where everything goes wrong. And to explore that aspect of it, because the Invisible was so utopian and so optimistic, I wanted to also bring poetry to the dark side of it. Our experience is huge.
Thank you very
You're
much.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Don't ever stop. Ever.
You can tell that to the Grim Reaper.
Hello, Mr. Morrison. Hello, Mr. Morrison. I was kind of wondering, a lot of people were saying how your depiction of Wonder Woman in The Return of Bruce Wayne was one of the best depictions of Wonder Woman all that year, even more than what JMS did. But I was wondering, do you ever want to pursue in writing the character or doing a one-shot?
Yeah, I'd still love to do Wonder Woman. I've got some ideas that I'd like to eventually work out. You know, I've been thinking about it. It's something that interested me, especially, you know, when I wrote the Supergirls book and really getting into what Marston was trying to do. And although it wasn't anything I could understand, to be honest, I liked that. You know, Wonder Woman was very successful when he was doing the weirdest stuff back in the original. And so I kind of like to find a way to update that and make it contemporary.
And also another question, what's the whole thing with you and Barry the whole dinosaurs versus aliens graphic novel that you're writing?
Yeah, I just finished the first draft on the screenplay. It was a guy who came to me with this idea that he had, and it was like him, you know, a couple of pages notion of dinosaurs versus aliens, and it was surprisingly good. You know, you think when you hear dinosaurs versus aliens, it should be one of the sci-fi movies where it's giant piranhas fighting nothing. But it was actually a really good idea, so we were working together on it, and I wrote the first draft of the screenplay, but it's also coming out as a graphic novel version from the guys at Liquid Comics, and it's got the most beautiful art by Mukesh Singh, who did the 18 Days book with me, and it's just gorgeous, you know, seeing him drawing these dinosaurs. It's a completely different take on dinosaurs and aliens. And I'm kind of excited by it, and it looks like it's got a good chance of being the first of my movies to actually make it to the screen.
When is that
planning
on coming out, the graphic novel?
I'm not actually quite sure. I know he's working on it right now, I've seen his amazing colour pages, but you'd have to ask those guys when they plan to bring it in.
Alright, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Miss Morrison.
Hello.
I love your craft. I'm curious about Marley Roy. Well, you're right.
I'm only kidding.
So what's up with Marble Boy?
What's up with him? I don't know. I haven't dated him for like a thousand years. Well, I asked us to write that thing with Brian Bendis, so you should ask him.
Well, like I said,
I left him in jail. I put him in that jail, the Cuban. I basically put him out a second series that I was really pleased with. It just didn't happen, you know. It was basically Marble Boy taking over the world's most dastardly jail, kind of working his way from the top to the bottom, and from the psychopath at the top to this monstrous, chaotic, kirby creature at the bottom of the jail. And he kind of tames everything and turns it into the capital city of the new Kree Empire on Earth, as he promised to do. So that's what it was. But I mean, I know he changed the tack on that character and made him a bit more conservative.
Well, your storytelling is magical. I like the way you just use your words to create.
No, well, thank you. God bless once.
Alright.
Hi.
Hey. Hey.
And Super Guys, you talk about how Bruce Wayne goes mad and starts to fight crime. And so I got me wondering, what does the same crime fighting Bruce Wayne look like? Is that Batman, or is that something more important?
What does the same crime fighting Batman look like? Batman to me has always been sane, you know. The minute he put on the suit, it was a sane response to what had happened to him. Otherwise, he would have just spent the money on drinking drugs and hookers, you know. Most people would watch their parents be shot dead in front of them.
Yeah.
And mom bleeding out into the gutter would be in a lifetime of therapy and probably blowing his money. And often having to drag him home every night in the bedroom, you know. So actually, he was always saying, like, he was really made himself sane, you know, was weird for the rest of us. And that's a metaphor for life.
Alright, thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, everybody over there. I keep looking over there. Sorry. Is that
happening? Well, I had a question for you about creativity and the writing process. What I'm kind of thinking about, I don't want to sound like a cynic, but it seems like the creative well is kind of running dry in general. You see across a lot of different mediums, the lack of originality, it seems like it's kind of almost at an end point. And not to sound like a sucker, but I think a lot of people are still putting out really potent original ideas. What's your take on that?
I can't speak for anyone else, you know. To me, originality is, you know, I just read this amazing book by Christopher Booker called The Seven Basic Thoughts, and it's this amazing, immense book about how we basically only tell seven stories over and over again, and everything in history is kind of based on the seven thoughts. So originality comes from the fact that every single one of us has a unique experience. And most of us are similar to humans. You know, we all have fears and loves and hates and all that kind of stuff. We all can understand what each of us feels. But everyone is one specific set of eyes in the entire history of life on Earth, in the entire history of the universe. And that's where the originality comes from, you know, by telling the truth about what you see. And if there's a lack of originality, it's maybe people not telling the truth and trying to be like someone else or like something else that they admire. And really, honestly, things will be original if you tell it from your perspective. Every one of us, you know, has the original eye, because it will never exist again. That's my take on it. I don't care what anybody else is doing. I'm doing my own stuff. And I enjoy the movies I enjoy, the books I read, and the comics I read. And they stimulate me enough. I'm not really missing out on originality. So maybe I'm just being optimistic.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm doing good. So my question is, well, first of all, I really like your stuff, Animal Man. I started reading it, and I heard my heart's going to break by, like, the third trade.
Yeah.
Or else I have no soul. But my question is, I heard that there's a screenplay floating around for Weed 3, and I was wondering where the process was on that.
Yeah, it's been floating around for a few years. You know, I wrote it a while back, and it was back at the time we did it for New Line, and then New Line had all these kind of financial troubles and fell through the cracks. So it's still around, you know, it's in development, as they say in Hollywood, and it's working its way through the sausage machine. But we've got a new director attached, we've got a lot of people interested in it again, so it's one of these things. Either it'll appear soon, or you never see it.
Was it weird to get back into screenwriting after writing comic books for so long?
No, I never enjoy screenwriting. It's a different way of writing. It's kind of a haiku, you know, it's a very specific form. And it was interesting to learn. I've written a few screenplays, none of which have been produced, so it's kind of been this weird ghost career. But I don't know, we'll see if the Barry Sonnenfeld thing takes off, which hopefully, you know, we hope it will be doing, then maybe it'll take a little bit more seriously and meet the open a chance. But the Hollywood guys always say, what's the tone? You know, and I say this, it's boring. You know this story, they always say, what's the tone? And I say, well, it's like E.T., but with more bullets. you look at Quigley's art and you just go, what do we have to invest? There's like eyeballs being sliced. So I say to them, no, but every time you adapt anything else, you take out the bits you don't like. Maybe you could do the same here, you know, if you don't want all the blood, then just take it out and replace it with yellow paint or something. I'm sure children will love it.
Hey, I was a huge fan, as you can see from the shirt, of your X-Men run. I think you made some amazing changes, some of which sadly have been undone. So, and I mean, you've done that with like a lot of series. I was kind of wondering, if you can make completely no editorial interference, one unretconnable change to any comic, what would it be?
I don't know, that's a weird question. One
unretconnable change, that's impossible. You know, somebody 25 years down the line will always change this stuff around. It changes constantly. I don't know,
what I would do is, like, so far I would split up Animal Man's marriage. Happily married, we have kids, and we have that basic lifestyle. And, you know, there's often a tendency when people come into characters to go for the cheapest shot kind of drama and split up happily married. So that's all I ask. I know Jeff Myers did the scenes with Animal Man, and I'm sure he'd keep the marriage. But that's what I would say. If I could change, do that, and so no one could change it, I'd like to keep those characters married. And,
thanks, that's a good answer.
Final Crisis Aftermath questions for you.
Yeah.
First of all, what's the status of Dan Turpin? Is he dead? Is he alive?
He's alive somewhere, probably in hospital, feeling quite poorly.
All right.
I mean, the guy's a dark side in his head, so he's probably lying somewhere trying to deal with that right now, and I'm sure we'll see him.
And if Earth is the fifth world, what does that make Earth 51, where all the new gods are reborn?
Well, they're starting out again. They've done the job here in this universe, and they've seeded the gods on Earth, and they've moved on to another universe to kind of bring up the new race.
And is Darkseid included with those that are born on Earth 51?
Yeah, Darkseid is there. You kind of see stuff in the multiverse. I think there's kind of hints as to what all of those characters are doing, even though it's not necessarily focused on them, you won't see those things. And Darkseid and all of them are kind of taking root again. So as I say, they're fundamental principles, they're eternal qualities, so they all just find a place to grow.
Do those designs from Final Crisis stay into that rebirth of the New Gods? Like Darkseid's costume with the lions and all?
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of that. I mean, obviously J.G. Jones did a lot of those designs and we didn't really get to see them, so hopefully we'll see them again in the multiverse.
You're welcome. I hope this is a funny question. Everybody's getting mad.
All right, funny.
No, you don't have to.
No, the question I want to ask you is, how is it that you and Frank Quitely collaborate so often? I'm just curious to see why you guys keep going working together, and hopefully it's not because they're both Scottish.
It kind of is because we're both Scottish.
He lives just right on the street, so it's really easy to collaborate.
No, honestly, it's that simple. I wish I could say there's anything more. No, but we do connect. I mean, I've got to say he's my favourite artist, and if I could be the artist that I wanted to be, it would be a lot like him. So I'm really pleased that this guy does live nearby and we connect so thoroughly. You know, I just don't feel that same way with any other artist. So it's really nice that we kind of live close by, and the geographical location allows us to talk a lot more about what we do.
Excellent, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Grant. I just want to say I'm a big fan of the Batman Inc. Run that you've been doing. And I was wondering, with DC doing its new 52 reboot launch stuff, and then that being kind of, like, I guess it was put on hold, when when it comes back, is it going to sort of like weave its way into being a part of the new universe?
Yeah, it's going to fit in with all this new stuff, but we're kind of wrapping out the first season in September or whatever it is, and the new one starts, I think, January 2011. And it's a 12-part story called Batman Viathan, which finishes up my entire kind of 6 years on Batman. And I guarantee you won't cry. Many times will you cry.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
There was a recent interview where you mentioned that you were working on a Flash story.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted it to be an Earth One story. How far along are you in that story, and what are the chances that DC will actually put out a Flash Earth One?
I don't know. I mean, this was just an idea that I had, and I spoke to Dan about it and said it's not like the usual Flash. It's a different take on the whole concept. And I just suggested it was Earth One because that might be a good place to put it, because they'd be doing a slightly more ground level approach to characters. And I wanted to do a Flash story that was a bit more like Groundhog Day or Incredible Shrinking Man or something, you know, one of those stories that's very kind of primal, pure stories about one single thing that happens to someone. And I thought it'd be really nice to just tell the story of a scientist who suddenly gets faster and faster and faster. You know, it's got a kind of Stephen King thing to it. So I kind of I like the idea of doing that, and it seemed to fit into the Earth One idea. But so far, it's just a notion right now. And, you know, if I get to do it at all, it'll probably be next year sometime. One, I have no idea whether it will actually be an Earth One book or what it will be in the end. It was just an idea for the Flash, a kind of had a story I wanted to tell. It didn't fit in the regular continuity.
What did they ask?
But that's offer, obviously, you know. It's like, you can always sell, you know, a good Flash story. So, yeah, I mean, he's into it, but whether it will be Earth-1 or, you know, I don't know what the status of that whole project is right now, you know, that we're doing the new 52 stuff.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I really enjoyed the All-Star Superman. I just want to know if there's any ideas or concepts. Action Comics, and if you have a epic run plan with George Perez, like you've been doing with Batman and Superman.
Yeah, the idea is to do quite a big run on Superman. I've kind of worked out 16 issues so far, and usually when I get to the end of that, I'll have more ideas of what to do. It's a different kind of story, but I kind of almost see it as the early years of the same guy that we see in All-Star Superman. And really, it's the, you know, the quintessential basic final Superman. So yeah, I mean, it's a big story. You know, it starts from this young guy that does a lot of different things. And I'm hoping people like it because it's very different from all stuff. But it's as big, possibly even bigger, I think, its implications for Superman.
I'd just like to say that your run on Batman is what got me into the character in the first place, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And I was wondering if, with the whole build-up to Leviathan and Batman Inc., if we're going to see some classic Batman villains involved with that, or if it's new villains like you were in your run on Batman and Ron.
There's new villains, but there's also some classic villains. You know, I mean, I haven't told everyone who Leviathan is yet. There's more to see on all that. There should be there's a big reveal at the end of Batman Incorporated 10. But I won't say too much about that one. There's a little mix of both.
Hello. Glad we can make contact. two-part question for you.
That's what the Martians said when they had
to. I have no reason to doubt that. First, I wanted to know, because you've mentioned in interviews before that when you were discussing what you were going to do with All-Star Superman, that you had a conversation with Superman and the guys of a man wearing a Superman outfit, and I was wondering if your magical praxis led you to any similar moments in preparing for your run of Batman. Second part of the question is, what's next for C-Guy?
Okay, I'll start with the second part. The next series of C-Guy is kind of underway a bit. In the first one, I'm working on the second one, and it's, you know, it kind of finishes up the story. So it's kind of waiting to happen. Callum Stewart's doing a Batman Incorporated, then
I think he's interested in the Captain Marvel issue of Multiversity, and somewhere in there about we'll be getting a Sega script and we'll just work on it and see. So I don't have any particular date for when it might be out, but it's in the mix and it's being written. So what was the first question? Batman's resolutely refused to turn up. No, Superman's a really nice guy, and I actually met him in the flesh, but no, I've never met anyone like Batman, thank God. Can you imagine how guilty it'd be with Batman turning up at the door?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Grant. Hi. First off, I just wanted to say, I know that a lot of people have told you this before, especially the people before me, but just thank you for being one of the most creative and out there writers in any kind of medium at this time, you know.
I'm just trying to be normal. I'm just trying to fit in.
I'm kind of itching to see that creativity in, you know, other media, especially in film. And I think that Hellboy showed us that people are really into the idea of sort of an ugly semi-monster working for the government, killing other monsters. That being said, have you ever considered writing a script for Frankenstein?
I mean, I'd love to do the version of Frankenstein that I did for DC, but obviously DC owns that now. Probably if Warner Brothers made a Frankenstein movie, someone else would be writing it. But yeah, I mean, I love that character. You know, I think it could be... One of my big ideas for that was to do a kind of a Hellboy, but instead of the supernatural stuff, you know, Frankenstein fights the weird science kind of menaces and that sort of thing. Toxic towns and weird stuff. So yeah, I mean, it would be nice to do, but it's unlikely to happen in the near future.
Alright, thank you. One more quick thing is, I'm from New Jersey, and I really liked your...
You have my pity. That's New Jersey, too. Every week.
Your Jersey accent really quickly.
Oh, no, you're laughing because you're the real deal. If I asked you to do a Scottish interview, you would go, your Jersey accent, what are you expecting me to do? Woo!
Maybe perform a song with Gerard Way called I'm a Badass?
Maybe.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just inhaled Red Bull. That's harsh. You don't drink this stuff.
I really enjoy your take on the Joker and then your new character, Professor Pig. I was just wondering how you get into the mindset to write such disgusting characters.
I think we've all got it in us. I just find that place inside where we kind of squirm, you know, in the dark and the maggots live, and I try and copy down what we're all saying.
Does that help?
Thank you.
I don't know, you read up on this stuff. Actually, with Professor Pig, I thought, you know, all these Batman villains are all supposed to be crazy. So I've been reading stuff written by actual schizophrenics, you know, poetry and outsider stuff, and I thought, I want Pig to actually sound schizophrenic. And it's always based on something weird, you know, they follow some particular train of thought. There are a lot of cases where, you know, I read some guy just talking about President Kennedy had put wires in his brain, and it's just real. So with Pig, I took these kind of... there's a couple of horrific experiments that were done to animals in the 50s. You know, the Rockville Barn Rat experiments, you check this stuff out, it's really creepy. But Pig was fixated on these things because something similar had been done to him. So it was all based around trying to reproduce the sound of an actual schizophrenic voice, you know, someone who was really super paranoid schizophrenic.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How you doing, Mr. Morrison? I read all your read all your Batman runs. It's really, really amazing. I just want to know, how'd you come up with the character of Simon Hurt? Like, how did you get all that?
I wanted to see Batman up against the devil, basically, and that didn't have to be literal. It was just the idea of the devil, this bastard who hates you and just will not stop until he's crushed your hopes and your dreams and your spirit underfoot. So what it started as that, you know, Batman beats the devil, and then I kind of worked it through using Batman history and Batman lore to try and create the character so that it seemed as if he appeared in the past.
Do you have any plans on bringing him back, or is he...
He's still rotting in a coffin and somewhere in the grounds of Wayne Manor. I won't be going back to that character, I don't think. Not the rest of the run is about a kind of completely different.
Okay, I really enjoyed that character.
Well, glad you liked
it. Thank you.
Thank
you.
Hi.
Hello.
Similar to your concept earlier about how changes and retcons are always going to be a part of the superhero genre. I've heard you talk before about how someone like Superman, we had, you know, the socialist golem in the 40s and the family man in the wiser years. Is the superhero idea something that is always meant to evolve and change, or do you think it's about these iconic constants? Because we see people either doing, you know, bold new directions or trying to spring back to something true.
Yeah, I think it's a natural progression. You know, these things are always trying to reflect what's going on in the world, and they're also trying to sell to people who are contemporary people rather than to people who live in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s. And as I've said before, I mean, the way I see the superhero universe is the kind of the real places. You know, these things have existed since the 30s, and they're still around now. They'll probably still be around when we're all dead. And that's what they are, they're for real, you know, so they change alongside us. And sometimes they change even ahead of us, you know, if you look at the 60s comics with the Flash constantly changing, and it happened just before LSD hit the streets of America. It kind of was a prophecy of that kind of the half body, the muscle man of the golden age started to break down and change shape, and we missed the fantastic, and the Flash was constantly losing his form, and Superman was changing shape, so they kind of walk with us, you know, and that's what I like about them. We come in every generation and we refresh them. So the idea of the iconic Superman was not real. There's some core to that character, but as you say, you know, in the 30s he was a socialist reformer, and then 10 years later he's a patriot riding missiles down the top of the Axis, and then 10 years later he's a suburban dad back from the war with an extended family of pets and relatives. And so on. So we kind of, the basic core is always represented for a new generation, just like Aboriginals paint the stories of the gods, and we retell the stories of the gods through each generation, but update them just a little bit to make them fit contemporary time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi.
Hi, Al.
I was wondering if we were going to get into a follow-up to All-Star Superman attention, or if you had another Vertigo series plan.
No follow-up to All Star Superman. It's kind of complete, but obviously some of the action comic stuff hopefully will strike a few of the same spots. Vertigo stuff, yeah, I've got plans for a bunch of new creator stuff, and we'll see when that happens, but I don't have any dates for anything right now.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Who do you like writing better, Batman or Superman?
Oh, see? I don't know, actually, now that I'm near the end of Batman, I'm slightly feeling the bum on Batman, and Superman seems really fresh again. I think Superman's starting to have more to say to the next 10 years than Batman does. You know, the capitalist millionaire superhero maybe has less to say to us all than the champions in the press. So just personally, I love Batman, nobody loves Batman like me, but I'm starting to get more buzz from Superman a little bit.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi.
Hiya.
I'm not sure if your shirt answers my question, but I was introduced to your work through the Animal Man trades.
Yeah.
And it seemed that at the time you were very angry about man's treatment of the environment and his fellow animals. So I was wondering if at the time that led you to any sort of activism, and if you still feel as passionate as you did then about animal rights.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a big activist, you know, I'm a writer, so I've always felt the best thing I could do is talk about it and pass ideas on through that way. So I was never a huge
Kavanagh of Atlanta activists. They certainly supported a lot of causes and still do. But yeah, I mean, I love animals, you know, I think that our brothers, you know, and it's, we really should be paying more attention to the way they communicate and the fact that they are, a lot of them are very self-aware, and then even though science in a lot of cases tends to deny that. So, you know, I love them, and I don't think we should mess them around, but we do, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
First, I want to say that All Star Superman is the series that got me to appreciate the character again, Superman, once again. But the question I have is about 18 Days. I remember there was some buzz over it a couple years ago. I really like the concept of bringing Hindu mythology and interpreting it and making it accessible to the West. But then after last year, a lot of news of it died down. So I'm wondering if the project's still ongoing or did it fall through the cracks?
It's kind of, I think they're still trying to do something with it, but we kind of, as far as I was, my involvement has stopped all the work that I've done. I created the Bible for the series and wrote down all the episodes. And I know those guys are still trying to do something with it, but, you know, as again, anything to do with the moving image seems to be, it could take years for it to happen.
Thank you.
You're
welcome.
Hello.
Hiya. My question is about your upcoming Action Comics run. You're saying that, like, how you're harking back to being the socialist champion and all that. Does that conflict with also what I've also been reading about, saying that he's going to be more Kal-El from Krypton than Clark from Earth, or is it all going to gel? Because that seems like it will be a contradiction. You feel it can't be more alien than human, so we actually care about humans.
Well, I mean, I'm not quite sure what they're doing over on the other title. You know, I think they may be playing up a little bit more of the Kryptonian stuff there. I'm kind of just doing him as the farm boy, you know, who's come to the big city, and he's a social reformer. Clark Kent does as much work as Superman, basically, to uproot corruption and to expose corruption. So the two of them are kind of working in tandem. Because, you know, Clark should be doing that. That's the kind of reporter he is. And I want to see him. So he's actually got as big a reputation in Metropolis as Superman does for fighting for social justice. I'm not really doing an isolated or brooding Superman. I mean, possibly the idea of him being isolated comes from the fact that Martin Parr Kent had an idea in the story as they were in the original. So he is more of an orphan, but you know, it's Superman. Superman isn't Batman. He can never be brooded and sitting on gargoyles, even a broody Superman still has a smile on his face, because you've got to remember, Batman, only two people died in his life, and he's been miserable ever since. Superman lost billions of people in the planet Krypton, and he still keeps a smile on his face. So, you know, there's no way he can keep his spirit down, and you don't want to make him too much like Batman. So certainly, the version of Superman I'm doing is quite proactive. You know, he's a young, powerful guy who's getting to help people in his own way, and he's a bit of an outlaw, and certainly not a brooding character. It's Action Comics, very go-getting. You know, Superman has to be doing stuff, doesn't think a lot about what he's doing because he's so pure.
So it's still going to be a lot of, like, okay, this is... He still gets stuff done in a little darker, but he's still that, okay,
yeah,
that people will work out.
He's only darker in the sense that he really gets stuff done, and he doesn't, you know, he's no longer necessarily a friend of the law. He stands for justice, and justice might not necessarily involve the law in Superman's eyes. So he's slightly more of a troublemaker or a trickster figure, I would actually see it as, rather than a brooding, scary alien thing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey.
Is it true, as I understand it, that magic and mysticism play a big part in your philosophy and belief system?
Yeah, well, magic does, but I don't buy into mysticism.
Okay.
So I can't believe.
Well, from a creative standpoint, do you view what you create, your work, as like an almost literal manifestation of that?
Yeah, it's part of it. I mean, to me, magic is really simple. It's just about the human imagination and the self-awareness that humans have, which is very particular and interesting, allows us to enchant and make significant, boring, dead matter. You know, that's what
right.
We do. That's what magic's all about.
Well, because I hear you know, refer to these worlds as being real, and I understand. I mean, I don't think I understand what you mean by that. But I mean, in that, if that's true, I mean, do you kind of view yourself as almost a wizard of those worlds? I mean, like, I mean, like, as a creator, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice way to put it. Wizard of the worlds. I want to be Dumbledore. Dumbledore and these
things.
What I think of it, no, it's kind of... I look at things magically, but the things I look at are solid objects, you know. So for me, the realism of the comic, right, if I can explain it this way, you know, when in the 80s when people introduced this kind of street-level realism to comics, they were kind of asking you to buy into the notion that these characters could exist somewhere, and that these were stories of another one of them couldn't really get to, called the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe. And the only way to see that world was to hear stories about it and see them drawn. But there is no place where the actual Marvel Universe, the actual DC Universe exists on paper, and you can pick it up. You know, that's what it really is. It's not a tales of another place. The place is actually in your hands. The paper is the place. And that was how I approached the whole thing. It was, I got to work in the second dimension, you know. And
yeah.
If you tell somebody that, it says, oh, you're a nut job, you know, you go to work in the second world, you flatten yourself down. No, what you do, you're working on a continuum that has existed for 70 years, but it is made of flat paper. And it's real, you know, this character's change and evolve through that time, and writers and generations come and go of artists. And it's, as I say, it's a place, it's a magical way of looking at something quite ordinary. You know, I treat the paper environment as being very real, and as a place with its own rooms that I can deal with or communicate with or work with. And it's just that, as I say, the magic idea of that is just to make it more significant, it's to make it more meaningful, that the actual object is worthy of seriousness. That's a useless
explanation. I think
some grumbles on.
That's fine. For the record, I think you're a wizard with your pen, and I think that pacing and Final Crisis is genius.
Welcome.
Thank you. In the Talking with Guys documentary about you, you showed off some of your idea books. I was wondering if you had any on you that I could
I didn't bring any with me. I've got a whole pile of these things, and as you saw in the documentary, all the pages are falling. And the worst thing is, I'll write these fantastic ideas in the middle of the night and then forget all about them. And I go back, and I've got finished comments coming, and it's all there, and then you go back and find an even better scene that you forgot all about, you know, and that I didn't do, and a better ending to a book.
There's a flash to that.
Which one was it that came
out? The Reverse Flash.
Oh yeah, probably. I just like drawing the Reverse Flash because he's the best way
Also, are we going to see any more Scarlet in Batman?
No, not in anything I'm doing right now. You know, she might turn up again in the future in the continuity, but not by me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello again.
Hello.
I just wanted to ask you, how do you feel, or would you do the same thing that they're doing with Dick Grayson? Would you take him away from being Batman and from being partnered with Damian?
Well, it's kind of happening, so we found a way to make it really make sense. You know, and I always thought they should just kept them together for like 5 years, and then I thought maybe 6 years. Because there was something about that team I think really worked on, and it felt very fresh, and it would be nice to let it go on a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, the people want Bruce Wayne back because he's the trademark character, he's the real deal, so it kind of always goes back to that basis.
I mean, you do great work with Dick, and I was totally in
So there's lots of good stuff with him next year. I mean, the Batman Leviathan is all about Batman and James, really, so you get to see a lot more of that. And he will cry,
and
cry.
And just one quick question. Do you have any inspiration, any inspirational words to an up-and-coming writer to help them out?
Yeah, like I said earlier, be yourself. You know, it's the one thing you've got and nobody else has got. And obviously, we all have influences and things that we like and we learn from, but ultimately, just be yourself. The more you can be yourself. But if you want to be commercial, you also have to remember that there are certain rules you may have to play. So be yourself, but be prepared to be told not to be yourself.
Thank you.
when I was reading your take on Batman and Robin, I really enjoyed all the allusions that you put in, like with Professor Fig, him being a lucid Pygmalion, and especially like the really subtle ones, like the Big Mike banana and how that was used to trick Dr. Hurton, and the ethereal allusions that brings up. And so I was wondering, where in the writing process do these allusions come up? Do you just set out to sort of make them, or do they just kind of fall in place as you go along?
Well, I kind of start saying, you know, Batman's a kind of puzzle book for me, you know, always like Batman stories where he's solving weird riddles and crimes, so I kind of set out with that idea, just to tell puzzle stories and stories with the secrets and solutions. I mean, action probably stuff's very different, you see, very physical and forward momentum. The Batman's puzzle stuff, so I always start with, you know, basic stuff, like pick a game, like dominoes, or, you know, pick the colors red and black, and then start building the thematics out from it. And it always starts with something, you know, your overalls thing, and Batman Incorporated, the snake eating its own tail, which kind of stands for the structure of the whole story. And you just find yourself starting to riff off these symbols and these ideas, and suddenly it spins out into all kinds of different things.
Thank you.
I have another question about your writing process. You put a lot of stuff consistently, it's always of a good caliber. Do you ever get into mutts or anything? And if you do, you have rituals to maybe add them? Or...
No, I wish I could say that. I never get lately to walk in every room. For me, it's just a double stroke or something. I'm all the time, but it's great. I just got to walk up and get it done. Honestly, I've never had, and I don't even get a chance to, I'm too busy. There's always a job to do, and they have to come up with a story. So I've never had a moment where stories don't come. And as I say, you know, I base them on real life and things that I'm actually feeling. So every day you're feeling something new's happening in life, or there's something on the news that affects you. So there's stories that are everywhere, that always happen. All you have to do is catch them right and then.
Also, is your upcoming action comic
run going to
take place in the present?
It takes place 5 years ago in current DC continuity.
Thanks.
So it's not quite the business, but it catches up in issue 7 to what's happening now, and it kind of goes back and forth between the different times.
Hi.
Hi, Al.
So I'm pretty new to comics, and so when I started reading.
Welcome.
Yeah. When I started reading, your comics were some of the first that I started reading, and I was really excited because I was really excited about the comic world in general, because it was a combination of two of my favorite things, which is writing and art. And I was really excited because I feel like comics are the new myth.
Yeah.
We don't really have myths anymore. So, and it really inspired me to become a writer, like in that moment. So I was wondering what really inspired you, like, to start writing comics.
Well, just reading comics, you know, I always wanted to be a writer when I was a kid. The first time I read a book, I just set my head on fire. I was, you know, 5 years old or whatever, and reading these Enid Blyton mystery stories. Weird middle-class children go out and solve really strange small-scale crimes. And sort of crimes that if they were real, they'd have me locked up in the trunk of a car. And so maybe I'd the middle-class children and the plucky dog always seem to solve the crimes without any violence. I'm just obsessed with it, you know, I just love stories. And I guess Enid Blyton and that stuff when I was a kid, and then I read, you know, people like Alan Garner and Tolkien when I was a teenager, and just the idea of stories, it was really obsessive to me, you know, and I've been influenced by a lot of people, dramatists, Dennis Potter, people like that.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck with your work.
Hi, my question is about Batman Inc.
Yes.
So, Batman is a well-funded vigilante who exists outside the law. Now, he's franchising that approach to justice. I see the real-world equivalent of that as Blackwater, which would make Bruce Wayne the equivalent of Eric Prince.
Except we know Bruce is a goody.
But do you see that Batman might be able to fall into that same sort of moral gray area?
Only if you want him to. I mean, for me, it doesn't work that way, because Batman is, as a character, is a good guy. You know, we know he's a good guy. I don't think it's useful to the story to do that story of Batman. Somebody else might think it would be good. My own approach is just to take for granted that whatever Batman and Bruce are doing, it's for the good of everyone, because that's just just who they are, and that's what the symbol of Batman means to me. You know, I don't think he's very realistic in any way, but what he is as a symbol is really strong, pure, and powerful. So I'd rather look at the positive side of it, because we've seen what corporate corruption can do, but it's more interesting to see what if there's actually a corporation with a genuine good guy in charge.
Great, thank you.
What if, indeed?
Hello. Well, I'm a big fan of your work, and I really enjoyed all the stuff you did in the Interbase videos and things like that. Question number one, what is that third Return to Jedi video for the Interbase thing?
I can't tell you anything about that yet. I don't really even know when we're doing it, but I know that they are doing it. That's for the band to say, not for me.
Fair enough. Next question is, has your role as that Terminator character basically gotten you any acting gigs or offers?
No, are you kidding? Everybody said to me, I did that thing, they said, oh, the phone's going to be ringing off the hook now with acting offers. Not one. I could easily have killed Batman. I could be Bane. I could do that. I could kill him. I could kill James Bond.
Well, thank you.
I'd love to kill James Bond. Is a harpoon through the face? Okay.
With the new relaunch in DC, I have to imagine that you had any pick of any character that you wanted. And Superman is great, but you've done that before. You've told the best Superman story possible. I have to wonder why you didn't branch out and tackle Wonder Woman, or why you got a Batman title from Judge Winnie.
And like I say, I'm doing Batman Incorporated and Superman. That's what I wanted to do, you know. And as I said, there's some kind of Wonder Woman work going on in the background, whenever that will happen.
Was there no other character in mind?
Nah, I've kind of done them, you know. When I did the Justice League, I did a lot of those characters and got through them, a lot of them. So I don't feel the kind of nostalgic thing about any characters anymore that I did when I was younger. I'm more interested in just getting the pure, the big names and the characters that everyone recognises and trying to do something with those.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Couple quick questions. First one, what's your favourite book on the shelf right now? It can't be one that you're writing. And my second question is, did you see the Dark Knight Rises teaser? And if so, what do you think?
No, I haven't seen it. Is it good?
It's awesome. It's really, I have my phone to come and watch it. It's pretty cool.
Two arms, who does he fight?
Well, it's like, you know, it starts out and it's kind of got the old footage with like Liam Neeson and the voiceover. And I swear I'm not doing it justice right now, but you get a couple glimpses of Bane at the end. He looks like getting like shit kicked out of him, and then Bane like walks up and there's someone in the background. Everyone online is talking about who that is. That's great.
I haven't seen any of these superhero movies this year. I haven't seen Thor.
Thor's sick. But yeah, about your favorite book on the rack.
I'm trying to avoid the first part.
Oh, yeah?
So what else do I like? I mean, like, comic books on the stand.
Other books, what are you reading right now?
I like them all. I mean, I kind of, I don't get a lot of Marvels because I'm not near a store and they don't send me anything, but DC send all of them. Yeah. And I like all the new guys, you know, like Scott Snyder's Detective Comics, Paul Cornell stuff, Nick Spencer's stuff. Mark Fraction, all those guys I've convinced. The one I really love is Brave and Bold, you know, the kids comic. And they have this guy, sounds like a pseudonym, so I don't know if it's for you or not, Shirley Fish, who writes the stories, and they're really great. You know, he does this, 20 pages, he can do the most amazing stories that feel as if you're reading a 60-page book. So that one, it's aimed at kids, but they're actually really beautifully constructed and written. And I know the usual people I usually like, one of the others, Joe Casey, all my favourites.
Right on, thanks. You should watch that trailer now.
No, I should.
It's cool.
My question is, when you're creating characters, what kind of process do you go, especially with your original characters?
I don't know, something just usually pops at the menu. I'm trying to think of an example. Like We Three, for instance, you know, those animal characters. It started out as a drawing that I was sent by my vertigo editor at the time, Shelley Roberg. This was more than 10 years ago. And she sent me a drawing of some girl that, you know, she was trying out for vertigo books, and she'd done a drawing of three assassins wearing suits and these weird helmets. And I just had this notion of what if the helmets went back and it was animal heads.
about these little sad, wet animals who didn't want to be assassins. And so from that drawing came the idea of these creatures on the run, and suddenly then, rather than having human bodies, we became animal suits. Things just come out of nowhere like that, you know? You just can see something and it suddenly starts to grow in your head as a character or a scenario.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Hiya.
So, you strike me as someone who is extraordinarily well-read. You talked a little bit about your early influences, Tolkien and so forth. I'd be curious to hear what, outside of comics, you've read recently or now that you might recommend.
I don't know. I mean, that book I was talking about, The Seven Basic Plots, is just genius, you know. That's the last thing I read that made a huge impression on me. I mostly just read non-fiction books to get, you know, ideas for the stories, science stuff, and, you know, quantum physics and fringe kind of ideas, usually to just, you know, to spark something off. So I don't read a lot of fiction in it, it's mostly just non-fiction books. And that was the last good one I read. Okay.
Hello.
Hiya.
So earlier you were talking about the new direction for Superman being going back to being a defender of the oppressed. And as a comic reader and a member of the GLBT community, I applaud your putting more diversity into the DC universe because it needs it. And I wondered if there's any future storyline for Superman taking on social issues of the GLBT community, something that hasn't really been done directly in the
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to kind of cover all of those things, and I don't want to do relevant comics, you know, the 70s things, when it was issue of the month or anything, but I'd like stuff to appear naturally as part of the texture of the stories, and you get to see Superman defending a lot of people that we didn't see in 1938, you know, and we weren't given a voice or even an image in 1938. So yeah, I mean, I want to see him being that character, although there'll be a lot of other elements to the story. Again, I don't want to make it issue-based, and I don't want to make it too obvious, but hopefully all that will be there as texture.
Alright, thank you.
You're welcome. Someone almost clapped.
It's okay. No, I'm a big fan of the Golden Age Superman. It's one of my favorite eras, and I was really excited to hear you were sort of taking that slant on your book. In your diabolical master plan with Action Comics, are you going to be actually adapting any plot points from those old books, or just keeping the tone?
No, it was more, I mean, it's not even the exact tone of those books, but certainly it was inspired by them, but no, it's not drawing on any plot stuff. As with Batman, we're trying to do lots of new things, although there will be familiar old faces done in a kind of different way, but it's mostly about trying to do new stuff and develop things that seem more contemporary, so certainly not any of the specific storylines from the 40s or the 30s, so even those old people.
No tearing down slums or super traffic cop?
No, there's things like that, but not the same. You'll see some tearing down slums in the first issue, but in a quite different way from that old story.
Thank you. Really looking forward to it.
Hope you enjoy it.
Hey, Grant.
Hiya.
I happen to be reading, it's kind of a cool synchronicity thing. I was reading Carl Jung at the same time I read All-Star Superman. I was seeing a lot of archetype, sort of the replaying of solar myth and things like that with All-Star Superman. Is that something you consciously work with during your writing?
It comes naturally. I read that Carl Jung stuff when I was like 18. I think my mother gave me those books, and I was really impressed when I was young. So it kind of embedded itself in my head. And, you know, reading the Joseph Campbell stuff and being a big fan of mythology and reading about the mythologies from all around the world. So I think just as a reader, as a kid, that kind of stuff absorbs into you and you're familiar with these old gods when they appear in new forms. And I just kind of I was aware of the idea that Superman was solar. And the book was called All-Star Superman, so we kind of wanted to make that very literal. And it suddenly seemed to make sense to tie it in with those myths.
And who do you tend to relate to Superman in a mythical sense?
Who do I relate to him?
Yeah.
There's so many of them to Superman. You know, any of the sun gods have connection with Superman, like Apollo and, you know, and characters like Christ, Moses. Superman embodies a lot of that, but you always have to remember he's a science fiction character and he punches people. Jesus and Buddha didn't even do that. So.
Two months old, probably with his fists as well. So he's very different. He's a machine age version of a lot of those archetypes, and it's never quite literal. You can kill a myth by copying it, but what you've got to do is allow it to infuse something new.
Winding down, so we have time for one more question.
Only one more? Okay, one more question, sorry. This will be the funny one.
I can't think of anything funny.
Sorry.
But just a quick, one quick point, one quick question. I love all your work, but I have to say, when you work with Frank Pitt, the other people, he's the best out of you. You work the best out of him. Probably be good to see you on the same panel at some point, but I guess geography makes sense.
No, I've got him back to work now, so you're never going to see me on another panel again.
And then one quick question is really around Superman and films. I think recently he hasn't perhaps done as well in the film industry as Batman has done. What are your thoughts on that? Why do you think that is?
Batman's cooler, you know, people prefer Batman. He's sexy, he's got more money, he's surrounded by powerful towers. And, you know. And basically, Superman's a guy that works in an office and he's got a boss and he can't get the girl. Nobody wants to be that guy right now. But I think there's a certain element Superman thinks coming back. As I say, with the colleague, we're trying to tap into the slightly anti-authoritarian Superman again. So I think he's been shackled by the idea that he has to represent patriotism or the flag or authority or the establishment in some way. And I think all he needs is to maybe scrape away a little bit and we might see a slightly more, a Superman that's a bit more related. You're welcome. So I think that's almost the end. I have to tell you, I have to show you this t-shirt, right? To check out Sinatra, you know, this movie I'm doing with Adam over there. This is this t-shirt. If you want one of these t-shirts, go on Twitter, Sinatra Twitter. Death is the new black. So that's, if you want one of these, check out on Twitter and we'll be giving them away and doing all sorts of things during the convention. You've got them in all kinds, of stuff. They fit everyone from leprechauns to giants. I think that's the end. And,